don't know about you, but I would just as soon see this day go on and 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 on. And I think primarily because, regardless of what his politics may turn out to be or his direction, the direction in which he takes the country, today Barack Obama gave me something I haven't had for about 8 years, and that is just a sense of hope, a sense of possibility. And doesn't the air smell cleaner already? Have you noticed that? We have some clips from Obama's inaugural address today that I think bear repeating. I know everyone has heard his inaugural address probably three or four times by this hour of the night, but we have cut out a few that we want to share with you. And in, our ongoing fond farewell to the Bush crime family, we have another little trip down memory lane with Pickles tonight. It was her visit to Afghanistan to speak to the women who were, quote, liberated, end quote, in 2003 by her sociopathic husband. You got to love Pickles. I wonder how the move is going today. I wonder if the Air Force has finished unloading her medicine chest yet and her her cigarette packs. Oh, God. Let me tell you something. For the past, at least seven of the past 8 years, it has been a rough ride. It really has, for you, for me, for most people who respect this country, who love what our institutions are, who have always been willing to see us grow to the point where we equaled what the framers had in mind when they put this country together, including moving beyond some of their shortcomings way back in the day. It's been rough. It's been rough for you. It's been rough for people who love the country, who love the institutions, who love the potential and the possibility. It's been extremely difficult as we've watched this gang that just rode out of town tear everything to pieces. And especially when they came in with the arrogance of the adults were coming to town now. They're going to run the country like a business. Boy, did they. They ran it just like Lehman Brothers, huh? But the arrogance. And as a result of the arrogance, what we have seen for 8 years, it's hard for me to believe that it's been 8 years since the first inauguration of the stolen presidency, the first inauguration of George Bush. And it's been exhausting. Again, it's not about me. It's not about you. But in a sense, it's about us, you know, the United States, America, what we have had to endure. No, we're not in detention camps. No, martial law hasn't been declared. But the destruction or the attempt to destroy directly and indirectly our spirit that these people involve themselves in, all the negativity. The ugliness, the meanness, the poverty of spirit, all the things that they have done to us and to this country for the past 8 years has just exhausted most of us. And I think what a lot of people, of that record enormous crowd of people, which I have heard is the largest gathering of Americans in any place in the history of this country, I think what was being expressed was, gratitude for the election of Barack Obama or the inauguration of Barack Obama and a new day. But I think also what was being expressed was this profound sense of a relief, absolute relief, that these thugs are gone. They're gone. They can do nothing tonight. Yeah, they've left a hideous legacy. Sure. Yes, there's a mountain of work to do. But it stopped today at about 5 minutes past noon. And they can do no more damage. The damage that they've done will live on. There's no question about that. But they can't do any further damage. And the sense I got today at about five after noon, not realizing that it didn't make any difference had Barack Obama taken the oath or not at noon, as demanded by the Constitution, he became president. But the formality, and the only thing John Roberts had to do today was to administer a very brief oath, and the fool couldn't even do that, which I think is just another classic example of how conservatives and Republicans can do nothing that's positive or creative or honest or from the spirit, from the heart, from the soul. They apparently are just not genetically put together that way. But during these past 8 years, we've had our moments, haven't we? I have, of absolute terror. What's going to happen now? What civil liberties are going to be destroyed next? When are we going to start hearing knocks on the doors as they come in the middle of the night to take down some of the activists? Oh, I realize some people have been railroaded through the judicial system. I understand that. But I'm talking about the wholesale arrest and incarceration, imprisonment of people who were struggling, fighting against this mob of incipient fascists. And I've also had moments of absolute, just complete depression. What do I tell my daughter? What do I, my youngest? What do I tell? How do I offer consolation to my adult kids? What do I tell them? And shame. I have felt shame as an American over the past 8 years to a degree that I didn't think was possible. I really didn't. I always thought that no matter what kind of crap we got involved in, that there was still a core of America, of the American government, I should say, that represented justice and honesty and decency and truth and ethical behavior. I believe that. Call me naive, but I believe that, except for the past 8 years. And I felt absolute shame about being an American. When Kathy and I would travel, it was like, okay, pretend like you're Canadian. Don't talk or just don't get into any discussion with anybody about what your government is doing. Explaining to Molly. Now, thank God she was young. But today she watched Barack Obama on television, not the live swearing in. She was in preschool, but replays. And she, you know, she said, "Who is that?" And I said, "That's the president." She said, Barack Obama is the president." I said, "Yeah, that's him." But how to explain to Molly? That was the thing I was just terrified about as she got older. What was I going to say to her? So it's been a rough ride. It really has. And I know anyone who loves our institutions, who loves the country, who believe we were moving in the right direction, not understanding this undercurrent of destruction that was going on about our financial system, our reputation, to the degree that it's been going on. I mean, all of it's new. But the Bush crime family, these buffoons, were destroying everything it took 230 years to build up. They were just crashing it and burning it and stomping on it for sport. And it was just awful. Awful. And I know a lot of people feel that way. Millions of people feel that way. So tonight it's over. The damage they've done will be around for us to deal with and this administration to deal with. But the sons of bitches are gone. They really, really are gone. The instigators, the people at the top of this dung heap that they built. And I've got some more to say about them when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy on NOVAM Radio.
drawn, the curse it is cast. The slow one now will later be fast, as the present now will later be past.
Our plan is working. We're going to make elections.
Good God. And I have to tell you, this Friday will be the last time, I hope, that we will ever, unless he's indicted for the war crimes that he has committed, ever have any sound on this program of George W. Bush. But back to his outlaw gang, a lot of the past 8 years I spent, and according to the emails, hundreds, if not thousands, tens of thousands of emails I've gotten over the past 8 years, and that's no exaggeration, the absolute fear people were beginning to feel that the country, while it was drifting, all the signs were there towards fascism. And I'm the first to, matter of fact, I did the thing for Eric, Eric's site, Bush, what was it, Bush Watch? Bushwatch.com, about the 13, was the 13 defining characteristics of a state that was moving towards fascism. But all that fear, that Eric Blumrich, all that fear that we had, that that was initiated, engendered, and cultivated by the Bush crime family, it was deliberate. It was all deliberate to keep us terrified, to keep us constantly afraid of external threats, the threats from us within this country, the threat of the unknown. That's how they one of the ways in which they manipulated us. And my fear and yours was that, yes, they were going to pull it off. That we were in the last stages of the grand experiment that the framers put together 230 years ago. This was it. This was the final act. And there's one thing that none of us took into consideration. These bastards were too pedestrian to be Hitlerian. They were too cheap. They were too cheesy. And mostly, they were too cowardly. Yeah, they could order the deaths of thousands. They could bomb cities and countries halfway around the world. They could pillage and steal and lie and cheat, like most Republicans. But they could not rise, if that's the right word, to the level of the kind of world-class thug that would have been necessary to really move this country in a direction from which we couldn't return. They were cowards. Even in that, even in their criminality, they were cowards. You've heard the expression, there's no honor among thieves. And there isn't. There's a lot of silence among these pigs, these thieves, these destroyers. But there was no courage. And we know this. Look at their records. Look at all of them. Take all of them together. And you can't find a cup full of courage over their entire lives. They ran, they hid, they dodged, they ducked, they were cowards, they stayed in the shadows. Everything was a secret because they were cowards. And this was the part that, while we may have talked about it, this is the part we left out. This is the element that saved this country from making the flip into complete authoritarianism or fascism. We are wounded. We are deeply wounded. But as though President Obama said today, we're going to overcome this. We're going to get back. And one of the reasons that we are so grievously wounded and yet not a complete totalitarian state is because these bastards were cowards. Now, the answer to that would be, well, Malloy, thank God they weren't. Sure. But it's another indication of how absolutely useless these people were. Their cowardice is what dictated every action they took. Their fearfulness. You know, there was a lot of talk about government should be afraid of people, not people afraid of government. You want to know something? It occurred to me today, these Bush bastards were terrified of us the whole 8 years. They were terrified of us. But we didn't do anything. And maybe that was a good thing. Maybe that's what prevented the kind of bloodshed in this country that we've seen around the world when people say enough and literally rise up. But these people were cowards. I'm so glad they're gone. Today, honest to God, as the day went on and the events of the inauguration unfolded, I started to feel a physical sense of relief. Like I hate to use these kinds of cliches, but a weight being lifted, a smell in the air blown away, hope returned. And the inaugural speech that pulled no punches, even though the two primary perpetrators were sitting within spitting distance. And I wish the cameras, if they were pool cameras, I wish they would have played more across George W. Bush's face when Barack Obama just spanked his ass. Barack Obama picked George Bush up by his neck bone today, turned him upside down, and paddled his ass in front of the entire world. And I'll tell you what, it was good to see. It was good to see, wasn't it?
Load of those things and being the same. Super blues walk in a town. Get you one in a million, but you got that. Shotgun shine, shake my body. Bone in the red side. Blue moon in your eyes. Yeah.
Sometimes when you don't measure, you just shuffle kids through. Then you wake up at the high school level and find out that the literacy level of our children are appalling.
Twenty-five before the hour, we're talking about the cowardice of the Bush administration. They were too pedestrian, too petty to be Hitlerian. And that was the thing that I missed over the past 8 years in my fear that these bastards were taking us into fascism. All they were doing really was looting the country. That's all they wanted. That's all they ever wanted. They weren't interested in power for power's sake, which is the mark of a real tyrant. But it takes guts to be a real tyrant. And in a twisted sense, it takes absolute courage of the wrong sort. Yes. But it still takes that emotion. And these pigs did not have that. They simply did not. They were here to loot and steal and rob and destroy. That's all. They had the power. And they jiggered the Constitution and the executive branch to the point where they had all the power they could possibly want. All they had to do was reach for it, but they were cowards. Absolute cowards. And I think that ultimately is going to be the defining characteristic of this gang. Cowards to the point of torture. Cowards to the point of massively invading a country that couldn't defend itself. Cowards to the point of trampling on the Constitution, destroying the environment, denying people of their civil liberties. Cowards, afraid that our system of justice wouldn't work with people that honestly deserve to be arrested and brought to trial. But that's not who they arrested. That's not who they had the military and the CIA sweep up. Goat herds, taxi drivers. That's who they went after. And I was reminded of their cowardice today when I watched Barack Obama step out of his limo with Michelle Obama and walk part of the parade route, demonstrating to the racist jerks in this country. Oh, and God, are they still there? Vermin, rats, worms, cockroaches. They're all over the place. They really are. The inauguration today did not wipe the slate clean of the people that live among us that are just dirt. And I think Barack Obama today, and getting out of that car, getting out of that limousine, he gave them all the finger. Here I am. Here I am. He showed every one of these racist little piglets that he's not afraid. He's not the least bit afraid. Not of that. And I really applaud him for that. There's another element in this country that I wish would get out of town today at the same time that Bush and that degenerate Dick Cheney did. Limbaugh and the rest of the radio crime family, if they were to leave the scene of their crimes, too. For 25 years, Limbaugh and his little copiers have done nothing but tear down every good and decent thing about this country. They were the enablers. They were the fearmongers. George W. Bush had 1/1,000th the audience that Rush Limbaugh had. Dick Cheney had 1/1,000th the audience that Sean Hannity and the rest of these right-wingers had. And the right-wing media in this country threw everything they could. All the stops were pulled out. Did you realize, Truth Seeker, that Barack Obama today took the oath of office on a Quran? You didn't know that? Did you know that underneath the scarf he had around his neck to stay warm was one of those checkered Yasser Arafat scarves? Did you know that? That's what the right-wing has done in this country, the right-wing media. So if Limbaugh, if only Limbaugh and the rest of the crime family were to leave the scene of their crimes too for 25 years, that's all they've done is just absolutely pollute the airwaves with their fear, their hate, their divisiveness, their negativity, their lies, their deception, their deceit, their half-truths, their untruths, on and on, as the pig man likes to say, across the fruited plain, 24/7. Ultimately, of course, these bastards failed. They failed. But look at the damage the right-wing talk radio people have done. Look at the damage. How many heads are so screwed on backwards in this country now from a steady diet of listening to this? If they had any honor, any self-respect, they would get out of town, take their money, and go. Leave the country now to those of us who are willing to clean up the damage that they helped do. These right-wing radio talkers have firebombed this country. They've dropped poison gas. They turned talk radio into a weapon of mass destruction. They have no honor. None. No ethics and no moral center. Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, and every one of their little piglet imitators, they have no moral element about them at all. Nothing. And the way they have murdered America's spirit for sport, for profit, for the hell of it, because they can. On and on and on, and I'll tell you something else. They're going to continue. They're going to continue in their attempts to destroy. It will continue until corporate America says enough. It doesn't make any difference. The numbers about how many people listen to these pigs are jiggered every goddamn month anyway. This filthy rag Talkers Magazine which is nothing but something put together by a guy whose name has been changed to Michael Harrison. I don't know what his real name was, but it constantly puts out there the lies and the deception about how big these audiences are for these two. Oh, the audiences are big. And the audiences are influential. Because the audiences consisted of every right-wing politician in this country. Where did Dick Cheney go when he had to relieve himself? That's right, to Limbaugh's program. I wish these people would get on the equivalent of helicopter one and get their asses out of town, too. They have raped and pillaged and stolen so much of this country, these right-wing talkers. They've got their stash. They made lots of money. They had fun murdering America's spirit for the past 20 years. So leave. Go. But it's up to corporate America. Corporate America. The networks. The syndicators. Some of the people that manage the radio stations that you're listening to this program on. They'll make the decision. When these filthy pigs should be banished, should be turned out. Go away. Haven't you done enough damage? Haven't you pissed all over the American spirit to the point where all of us are just squishing when we walk around because of your excesses? So, yeah, the Bush crime family got out of town today. But I sure wish these right-wing radio talkers would just disappear. Leave the country to people who want to try to repair the damage that's been done. And, oh, has the damage been done, huh? But I'll tell you what, it was really something to watch the swearing in of Barack Obama today. When the cameras would pan through the crowds of estimates anywhere from 1.5 million to 2.5 million people. Dear God. And the cameras that would pan through the crowd. And see the expressions on people's faces. Black folks, of course, but white people, too. I mean, it's just like, oh, my God, we're going to make it. We're going to escape from the Bush crime family. It's really going to happen. Another 2 minutes, another 1 minute, another 10 seconds. Oh, my God, it's done. I heard something on MSNBC tonight. The Washington, D.C. police reported today not one arrest. Not one. I am so glad that the Bush organization is gone. I just can't even begin to tell you.
I had the aha moment when you and I were picking Molly up from school today about 1 o'clock Eastern time, and I thought, you know, we didn't get carted to Gitmo. We can go to the airport and not worry that when we get on the plane it's going to make a surprise landing in Thailand.
A lot of people feel that way. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
How will you deal with the souls of the soldiers and innocent people who died for a lie? How will you live with yourself when you're older? Will you hear their screams in the breeze blowing by? How will you sleep when those spirits come at you every midnight hour? Will you forget all the waste and the wreckage when you're back on your ranch in Texas?
It's about 10 before the hour. Now, I think I've got more emails today than any one day for a long time that I've been in talk radio, maybe 2001, September 11th. It was a greater volume, but there were so many that came in today. And just a few that I want to share with you, starting with this one from Prairie 2, our economics advisor. Mike, you wouldn't think that a new U.S. president would have to include in his inaugural speech the phrase, science will be restored to its rightful place. What century is this? Did the statues of Franklin and Jefferson stand up and applaud? Obama went on to exonerate Bush in nearly every paragraph and made it clear that the last 28 years of Republican rule based on Reaganomics must end. He said, quote, our economy is badly weakened, a consequence of greed and irresponsibility. And he went on, a nation cannot prosper long when it favors only the prosperous, end quote. He made reference to taking the oath, quote, amidst gathering clouds and raging storms, end quote. And the Dow dropped more than 4% today, the most ever on an inauguration day. Thousands of new layoffs were announced today alone. Obama did immediately upon leaving the podium go into the presidential room in the Capitol, and as his first act as president of the United States, signed an order voiding all of Bush's executive orders and pending rule changes across all federal departments and agencies. There is a glimmer of light among the clouds. Pray, too. From Jeff, regarding the end of the Bush regime, Mike, yes, they were cowards. But I think there's another reason why the Bush crime family did not declare martial law or invade Iran and claim that only they could keep us safe. And that is, there was nothing left to destroy or steal. The U.S. and the world economy is destroyed. The U.S. Treasury is depleted, a Republican dream since 1980. Bush's oil industry friends have access to the 62 known but unexplored Iraqi oil fields. Mission accomplished. Mike in St. Paul writes, Mike, it was Chief Justice Roberts who screwed up the oath today. Roberts said execute before he said faithfully. Of course, I can hear the knuckle-draggers already, oh, see, he didn't get the oath right. He didn't swear in right. I told you, he's the Manchurian candidate. Hope some of them call in tonight. Mike, St. Paul, here's the oath. I do solemnly swear that I will faithfully execute the office of President of the United States and will, to the best of my ability, preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States. So help you God? Did you get that at the end? When Justice Roberts asked him, so help you God? So help me God. Oh, and by the way, I particularly appreciate the fact that Barack Obama mentioned the non-believers today in reference I really do feel like I've been at a prayer meeting for the past week or so, right? Not that there's anything wrong with prayer meetings. They're great fun to go to. I used to have a good time going to prayer meetings when I was a little kid and watch all the adults scare the hell out of me. But I appreciate that little bit. Ron in Briarwood, New York writes, Mike, here's another example of what good parents Barack and Michelle are. The Obama girls will be spending the first night in a strange new house tonight, and their parents will not be there because they have to attend inaugural balls into the wee hours of the morning. What to do? Have a sleepover. Sasha and Malia will be having fun tonight in the White House with some of their best friends from Chicago. The Biden grandchildren will be there, too, for the pajama party. Now, how great is that, Ron? Yeah, how great is that? Mike from Connecticut. Hi, Mike. After seeing the crying faces of the relieved masses at the inauguration, it occurred to me that what the country has been through during the last 8 years is similar to a battered wife. Today, she finally left her abusive husband and cried, hell no. Never again. How can anyone with half a brain not see the hope we now have as a country? Mike in Connecticut. And you know, I'm the first to insult myself and most of us in this country because of our political ignorance. But I'll tell you what, I think after having experienced what we've experienced for the past 8 years, I don't think we'll allow this to happen again. And again, that may be wishful thinking. But I just don't think we would allow this to happen again. Thomas in Mountain Ranch, California writes, Mike, I never thought that I would tear up for an inauguration, but today I found myself doing just that. But how the work really begins, after all the lilting rhetoric phase, the business of repairing what the Bush crime family has perpetrated against us begins. The first small bump in the road is the procedural maneuver by Senator John Cornyn enforcing a roll call vote for the confirmation of Senator Clinton for Secretary of State. I believe that we had better gear up for the new age of Republican obstructionism. Does President Obama have the guts to propose plans that speak to the desperate needs of the nation? We have heard of late that the Republicans wrote legislation beginning from the radical right of the spectrum, thus causing the left to move to the right to get anything passed. This begs the question, will the new Democratic majority follow suit by introducing legislation from the far left side of the aisle? I'll tell you, I won't be holding my breath. And as far as cowards are concerned, don't expect the vaunted Congress to stand up and demand justice be done to officials of this outgoing administration. Good words only go so far. Thomas, Mountain Ranch. All right, we've got some more here, and we're going to play some excerpts from the inauguration today that I think are certainly worth repeating for the umpteenth time today. So stick around. Oh, and Pickles giving her her speech back in 03, was it 03? Or 04, about all the wonderful things that were about to happen to the females of Afghanistan. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. We are sharing with you some of the emails that we got here at the Malloy program today regarding the inauguration of Barack Obama and the getting out of town of the Bush crime family. Before I get back to those, though, I just want to mention something to you. Eric Blumrich, whose website, bushflash.com, bushflash.com, has been a website, a video website, with some of the most creative work on the web for the past 8 years. Eric is going out of business. He's going to close it and put the site up for sale. And the entirety of his site will be available for download as a self-contained archive starting, I believe, tomorrow. So if you are familiar with Eric's work at bushflash.com, you're already stampeding to get to the site and download this stuff. Again, some of the most creative and powerful video work that I've ever seen in the past 8 years. Bushflash.com. So if you want to get it, he's offering it for free, I guess. Yeah, just it's available for a download as a self-contained archive. You'll have it all there. All of these incredibly creative videos that were put together over the past 8 years. Bushflash.com. Now, to show you the ignorance, the utter idiocy of Fox News Channel and the people who tune in, and especially Chris Wallace. You would think that being the son of Mike Wallace, this guy would not be as backwards as he is, Chris Wallace. But according to LA Times, Chris Wallace told Fox News viewers about an hour after Obama had taken the oath of office today the following, quote, "Well, again, we're wondering here whether or not Barack Obama, in fact, is the president of the United States." They kind of garbled the oath. It's just conceivable that this will end up going to the courts. But as Britt Hume rightly pointed out, if it does go to the Supreme Court, certainly Chief Justice Roberts will say that that he took the oath properly. I mean, this is a kind of garbage. I mean, oh, my God, I'm not going to belabor the point, because we all know that Fox News Channel is an absolute toilet. It is a septic area of the bandwidth that just deserves to be isolated, and put people on there like Hannity and Glenn Beck and O'Reilly. Just put them there, and Chris Wallace, put them there. You know, does Wallace not understand? I mean, he's a newsman. His father is the celebrated Mike Wallace. Doesn't he understand? And surely he must have, because at 2 minutes after noon, before the oath was administered, it was pointed out on CNN and MSNBC, I believe, that regardless of whether he took the oath or not, at noon on the 20th, he became president. There was no oath necessary. He could have stood there and said, and he would have been president. He should have done that.
That would have been more fun.
That would have been more fun. Sandy in Portland writes, Mike, I'm sharing so many of the thoughts and feelings you're talking about tonight, including the sense of a huge weight being lifted from our collective and individual shoulders. Of course, now the work really begins, but I think we have hope. Recalling your many requests for just one good thing W has done for this country, I think I've got it. He left office today, and with not much more than a whimper. Whether that meets the qualifications of a good thing or not, I suggest the neocons and Republicans run with it. Sandy in Portland. Peter in Delray Beach, Florida writes, Mike, the Bush crime family is gone? Never think that, my liberal brother. They are never gone. They just fall back, regroup, and mount another attack. Like a seemingly dead vampire in the coffin is not dead, but undead. A drop of blood, and they revitalize. Can you say Jeb Bush? He's there, M.M., waiting. Those of us amongst the living must be ever vigilant. Our celebration is well-deserved, but unless we watch carefully, the celebration will be short-lived. Well, okay, but can you see anybody in the foreseeable future voting for anyone named Bush to the point that they would win? Of course, you're talking about Florida, so I say what I said advisedly. Lauren writes in the subject line, don't want to be the only listener not to email today. Mike, I'm so relieved I felt a huge weight lift off me as I watched Bush get on the helicopter with his mommy and daddy, and the helicopter left and nothing bad happened. I have the picture of him getting on the copter as my desktop picture now, and it makes me smile. Now all we need is to get our stupid conservative anti-environment prime minister the heck out of Ottawa. Lauren, of course, is Canadian. Yeah, good luck with that, Lauren. Alan from Minnesota writes, Mike, today as I was celebrating Bush's exit, I was left to ponder if there was anything that this moron did that made a change in my life. And after many hours of thinking, I finally discovered that he's the only one who got me listening to progressive radio. The lies and the deceit I heard at the beginning of the Iraq War could only be answered by listening to you and others. I found progressives to be some of the best people I've ever met, and I want to thank you for your part in providing Americans with the truth. Alan from Minnesota. Okay. Well, for once I'll say, okay. Yeah, thanks, Alan. Really. I'll accept that. Jen writes, Mike, how are you today? Me, I can't really put my feelings into thoughts. I'm walking around in a surreal type of mood. I guess that's the best way to express it, because part of me is trying to tell myself this is a dream. You're going to wake up and Bush is still going to be at the helm. It does feel like a huge weight has been taken from my shoulders and your shoulders and the world's shoulders. You know me, I've written a few times about my certainty that Bush and Cheney were going to hold on to power. I'm so glad I'm going to have to eat those words now. I also loved how President Obama basically slammed Bush and his policy and actions in his address. Yet here's my problem. I've been living with this fear for 7 years, and now I'm not sure how to get out of this mindset. Does that make sense to you? I'm so used to fearing about talking to my husband in public about the stupid Bush administration. I know I also am on pins and needles to see what President Obama will or won't do to the crime family. If he doesn't heed Keith Olbermann's special comment the other night and doesn't prosecute these people, what will become of this country? How much can we really change for the good if Bush and Cheney and the rest aren't punished? Jen. Yeah. I hear that. And our technical advisor, Ben Birch, sent an email to me. Mike, looking at the numbers here, the inauguration was more Americans in one place than at any time in our history, even D-Day. Operation Overlord was 2 million by August of that year. Operation Obama was well over 2.5 million by numbers I'm seeing. Ben. Ron in Briarwood, New York. I already did one by Ron, but what the hell. Hi, Mike. All the niceties of protocol, all the hugs and warm handshakes were swept away by President Obama's inaugural speech today. Obama ripped into the Bush failures. The line that stood out for me was when he said, quote, "For everywhere we look, there's work to be done," end quote. In other words, putting it bluntly, they screwed up everything. We'll be back with some of the sound from the inaugural speech today in a minute. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. Past the hour. I think we're pretty aware here at the Malloy program that things could go off the rails with the Obama administration. But like I said when the program began, I would prefer this day not to end. But Nicholas writes regarding this ever happening again. And Nicholas writes, oh, it can happen again, Mike, but this time it will happen nice and slow, so you won't even notice. Remember, he said he will send another 30,000 troops into Afghanistan. As we both know, this is complete madness. Buchanan even says so. Let's enjoy the show anyway. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. That's right. We'll soon know some things, won't we? Reg writes, am I the only one who wanted this to end with Laura pushing W out of the helicopter and flying off into some place that has no extradition treaty with the U.S.? No, you're not the only one. And Bill from Ottawa, right? Boy. All right, it's that time of the day when folks are getting the real you. Is coming out, right? Let me see. Oh, Bill from Ottawa. Hi, Mike and Kathy. Wasn't it great today? I don't mean about Obama, although I still have some hope for the man. I mean about the Cheney wheeled out in a strange Lovian wheelchair. It was perfect, almost justice, almost. It's odd that he himself, the old demon, was lifting boxes, but of course he had to do it personally. No one could see what was in those boxes, not and live anyway. I wonder how he got his coffin filled with the sacred soil of his native Transylvania out of the residence. I was watching Bush's ugly face today. He looks scared, unsure of himself. He's like the man behind the curtain now, revealed as a little man, a small man, a separating boil on the backside of humanity to be lanced soon enough. All this talk from Obama about civility makes it sound like prosecuting George Augusto Bush for torture crimes would be impolite. It's going to be interesting to see how Obama handles this. Will his first message to the world be, torture is wrong, but not when we do it? And then from harpers.org, Bill sends this. America's closest allies overseas understood the Bush administration's obsession with torture. A British politician told me, it's written by Scott Horton, quote, it's as if an old friend had a stroke and suddenly went delusional, end quote. And as the final hours of the Bush presidency ticked down, the expectation builds in Europe that Obama will do the right thing. That would, of course, be to prosecute the Bush administration figures responsible for introducing torture as a matter of formal policy. As they all point out, this is what the United States formally committed to when it adopted the Convention Against Torture, which was largely the product of American advocacy to begin with. This is from Süddeutsche Zeitung, Germany's leading daily newspaper, from a column published today. Quote, the departing American president is leaving his successor not only foreign and domestic problems, but also a perplexing judicial legacy. During the election campaign, the question was already being debated. How would the Obama administration act with respect to the prosecution of the Bush administration figures involved in the torture of suspects held in the war on terror? In April 2008, Obama stated that after thorough investigation of the facts by the Justice Department, a decision would be reached as to whether this was simply stupid policy or something more sinister which approached the level of criminal conduct. In his latest interview with ABC, he clarified that with respect to national security matters, he would rather look forward than backwards into the past. However, he noted if someone had broken the law, this would have consequences since no one stands above the law. No matter how things proceed, this marks a break with the prior broad public debate and with Obama's prior comments. For the first time in U.S. history, serious political and legal attention is being dedicated to whether a departing president and his administration have committed crimes of torture and whether individuals should be held to account under criminal law. This is noteworthy and laudable. And in the leading French Francophone daily of Belgium, Le Soir, the paper offers several pages of analysis of the basis for a criminal prosecution of Bush. In France, public radio there offers a detailed dissection of a potential criminal prosecution of Rumsfeld, and on and on and on. Then Scott Horton writes, Barack Obama and his advisors need to recognize that the prosecutions will occur. The only issue now is whether America will face the additional humiliation of having the prosecutions brought by our closest allies because we lack the moral strength and resolve ourselves to do what is necessary. I like Reg's idea. It would have been great to see Laura push him out of the helicopter. All right, we'll be back after this break. Stay with us. President Obama at his inauguration when we come back. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Thank you.
got a lot of problems. But I'm going to tell you something about this country. In my mind, there is no doubt that we won't solve these problems.
Oh, Jesus. All right, from the insane to the rational, at least for today. And yeah, I'm getting some emails from people who want to remind me that, you know, I have my head firmly up my ass where it concerns Barack Obama, that he is just chapter two or chapter three of the same corporate America thug run on this country. I don't agree with that, but even if it does turn out to be true, like I said when the program started, today is inauguration day, and I'm just not going there. At the his inaugural speech today, Obama describes the hideous nightmare that the Bush crime family has left for him to untangle, for us to untangle. And he said this while Raisin Brain sat behind him with that dumbass look on his face. And you know what Bush was thinking? He was thinking, oh, I wonder where I can get a beer.
That we are in the midst of crisis is now well understood. Our nation is at war against a far-reaching network of violence and hatred. Our economy is badly weakened, a consequence of greed and irresponsibility on the part of some.
Ah, really?
But also our collective failure to make hard choices and prepare the nation for a new age. Homes have been lost, jobs shed, businesses shuttered. Our health care is too costly, our schools fail too many, and each day brings further evidence that the ways we use energy strengthen our adversaries and threaten our planet. These are the indicators of crisis, subject to data and statistics. Less measurable, but no less profound, is a sapping of confidence across our land.
Uh-huh.
A nagging fear that America's decline is inevitable, that the next generation must lower its sights. Today, I say to you that the challenges we face are real. They are serious and they are many. They will not be met easily or in a short span of time. But know this, America, they will be met.
Yeah, our health care is too costly. Our schools fail too many. Further evidence that the way we use energy threatens the planet. Our economy is badly weakened, a consequence of greed and irresponsibility on the part of some. Yeah. Couple more pointed observations about the nightmare that he, Barack Obama, is inheriting from too stupid to chew a pretzel.
We remain the most prosperous, powerful nation on earth. Our workers are no less productive than when this crisis began. Our minds are no less inventive. Our goods and services no less needed than they were last week or last month or last year. Our capacity remains undiminished. But our time of standing pat, of protecting narrow interests and putting off unpleasant decisions, that time has surely passed.
Uh-huh.
Starting today, we must pick ourselves up, dust ourselves off, and begin again the work of remaking America.
Pick ourselves up and dust ourselves off, with the perpetrator in chief sitting right behind him. Sitting right behind him. With that dumbass look on his face that he's always had, Bush. So, economically, the Clinton administration left us in pretty good shape. It, a certain aspect of it was smoke and mirrors, but I don't think that had as much to do with Clinton as it had to do with the Ponzi artists who are already at work. And then this mental and moral midget practically threw us back into the dark ages. It's going to take some time to dig back out of that hole, right? And while the dumbass sat there and the vampire in his wheelchair sat there, President Obama further details his cleanup plan following the Bush years.
The state of our economy calls for action, bold and swift, and we will act, not only to create new jobs, but to lay a new foundation for growth. We will build the roads and bridges, the electric grids and digital lines that feed our commerce and bind us together.
Here it comes.
We will restore science to its rightful place and wield technology's wonders to raise healthcare's quality and lower its cost. We will harness the sun and the winds and the soil to fuel our cars and run our factories. And we will transform our schools and colleges and universities to meet the demands of a new age. All this we can do. All this we will do. Now, there are some who question the scale of our ambitions.
Republicans.
Who suggest that our system cannot tolerate too many big plans.
Republicans.
Their memories are short. For they have forgotten what this country has already done. What free men and women can achieve when imagination is joined to common purpose and necessity to courage. What the cynics fail to understand is that the ground has shifted beneath them.
Yes!
That the stale political arguments that have consumed us for so long no longer apply.
You know, I can get behind that idea, right? Can you, Truth Seeker? Huh? Or do you want to send me an email telling me Obama is just another step in the corporate takeover of the United States? I'd just spare me that tonight, okay? But that line that Prairie 2 mentioned in his email, that line in there about we will restore science to its rightful place. Jesus God, I swear that sounds like something that might have been said during the Enlightenment. It's astonishing that a president of the United States has to say that. And Bush and Cheney and Lynn Cheney and Pickles sitting there. Next, Obama explained how he would correct the global image of America the bully, America the brute, America the murderer and killer. How he'll erase that evil, menacing face that Bush put on the American flag.
As for our common defense, we reject as false the choice between our safety and our ideals.
There you go.
Our founding fathers, faced with perils that we can scarcely imagine, drafted a charter to assure the rule of law and the rights of man. A charter expanded by the blood of generations. Those ideals still light the world, and we will not give them up for expedience's sake.
Amen.
And so, to all the other peoples and governments who are watching today, from the grandest capitals to the small village where my father was born, know that America is a friend of each nation and every man, woman, and child who seeks a future of peace and dignity. And we are ready to lead once more.
And we are ready to lead once more. Doesn't it speak volumes? You know, I could have sat there and listened to this all day as Barack Obama repeatedly kicked George's ass, repeatedly slammed him for the crappy policies that he's pushed onto this country and the planet over the past 8 years. I could have listened to this all day. It was music. It was cold water to somebody who's been in the desert. He goes on to explain how he will begin to repair relationships with the other nations of the world that Bush has screwed up and destroyed, and how he'll restore the dignity and reputation of America.
Recall that earlier generations faced down fascism and communism not just with missiles and tanks, but with the sturdy alliances and enduring convictions. They understood that our power alone cannot protect us, nor does it entitle us to do as we please.
There you go.
Instead, they knew that our power grows through its prudent use. Our security emanates from the justness of our cause, the force of our example, the tempering qualities of humility and restraint.
Uh-huh.
We are the keepers of this legacy. Guided by these principles once more, we can meet those new threats that demand even greater effort, even greater cooperation and understanding between nations. We will begin to responsibly leave Iraq to its people and forge a hard-earned peace in Afghanistan. With old friends and former foes, we will work tirelessly to lessen the nuclear threat and roll back the specter of a warming planet.
What radical ideas? Where did you come up with this stuff? You know, the right-wingers are wrong. They're wrong, Barack. You know, you're not a Muslim. You must be a communist. You're going to roll back the specter of a warming planet. You're going to leave Iraq to its people. You're going to develop our strength through the tempering qualities of humility and restraint. You understand that power alone can't protect us, nor does it entitle us to do as we please. Wow! You must really hate America, huh, Brock? Has Limbaugh already started talking about that? If he has, you'll know Hannity has. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
Cleaning up America, one flying monkey at a time. It's Mike Malloy.
It's about 10 before the hour. All right, this last one is from near the end of his inaugural address when President Obama explains how we will return America to its former ideals and foundation and stature.
Our challenges may be new. The instruments with which we meet them may be new. But those values upon which our success depends, honesty and hard work, courage and fair play, tolerance and curiosity, loyalty and patriotism, these things are old. These things are true. They have been the quiet force of progress throughout our history. What is demanded then is a return to these truths. What is required of us now is a new era of responsibility, a recognition on the part of every American that we have duties to ourselves, our nation, and the world, duties that we do not grudgingly accept, but rather seize gladly, firm in the knowledge that there is nothing so satisfying to the spirit, so defining of our character, and giving our all to a difficult task. This is the price and the promise of citizenship. This is the source of our confidence, the knowledge that God calls on us to shape an uncertain destiny. This is the meaning of our liberty and our creed, why men and women and children of every race and every faith can join in celebration across this magnificent mall. And why a man whose father less than 60 years ago might not have been served in a local restaurant can now stand before you to take a most sacred oath.
And there's more, and you can hear the whole speech. And I certainly do appreciate, and by appreciate, I mean understand and accept the cynicism that, because I feel it too, that a lot of people are feeling. Part of that, I think, is the result of 8 years, and if you want to include Clinton, 16 years, and if you want to include Pappy Bush, 20 years, and if you want to include Reagan, 28 years, I got to stop somewhere. Let's stop there. 28 years of deceit and lies, failure to take responsibility for criminal acts that this country has committed, our country has committed against so many other countries. If we go back to Reagan and count forward the number of people that we have killed for no reason other than corporate interests of the United States, I think a lot of us would suck a gas pipe tonight and wouldn't be able to handle it. I've got that reversed. Wouldn't be able to handle it and would go suck a gas pipe tonight and bring it all to an end. Because what we have done has been just outrageous. It's been horrifying. And what we have enabled has been outrageous and horrifying of other regimes to attack helpless people and destroy them and kill them, murder them, slaughter them. So the moratorium with me continues, but I appreciate the cynicism. Marty writes, "Hi, Mike. Like the O.J. Simpson trial, I chose to ignore the inaugural of now President Obama. Frankly, the clips I've heard sound pretty, but if you don't mind, I'll hold my enthusiasm until I hear or see the deeds that match the words. However, you're correct. Today is a day of celebration. The work resumes tomorrow." And from Kurt, "Hey, Mike, what I feel about Obama is that he will be good for science and especially the environment. But I'm sorry, Mike, I'm just kind of keeping my powder dry here. I will get excited when the words become actions and the wars subside and justice begin to take its rightful place throughout the world, especially, as if I have to say it, in Palestine and for the Arabs in Israel. There is hope, but alas, only tentative joy. Kurt." P.S. He said, "Leave Iraq to its people." Well, then I hope he's planning to leave them a really nice check of around $100 billion. What is that, $100,000 for each and every dead Iraqi? Sounds like getting off cheap to me. Suzanne in North Miami writes, "Mike, I'm listening to you read emails from your listeners, and they all seem to have the same, quote, weight lifted from their shoulders, end quote. Well, call me crass, but the Bush regime leaving the White House is like America getting an enema that it's needed for the past 8 years. Sorry, but I can't think of a better metaphor, a purging, so to speak. So George can think of himself as a liberator because he is. He liberated us today." And this one from Mark in New York City, who writes, "Mike, the only thing that could have made this day better would have been a massive flock of Canada geese darkening the airspace around Air Force One as it headed for Texas." Oh, Jesus God. Bob in Palatine, Illinois writes, "Mike, when I saw them push Cheney in the wheelchair, I thought for a moment that I was seeing the reincarnation of Lionel Barrymore as Mr. Potter. But as I counted down the minutes and seconds on my Bush watch screen, I wanted to yell, 'We made it!' like Jimmy Stewart, as our country had survived our darkest hours, just like the Bailey Building alone. No implementation of Presidential Directive 51 after all." Yeah, but it's still on the books, right? All right, we have a break here, and when we come back after the top of the hour, we'll take some phone calls. We'd love to hear what you got to say. And we'll also have, in a little while, the speech that Pickles gave to when she was in Afghanistan 4 years ago about this wonderful initiative 5 years ago to help the Afghan women really discover themselves, thanks to her Bushies' efforts to liberate same. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. 7 past the hour. Welcome back. Molloy program on Nova M on Barack Obama Inauguration Day. Just an example. Things have been popping up all day because people have been sending a lot of various and sundry emails here. But remember the guy who became famous or notorious. The picture, he was a guy standing on the crate with the pointed hat on his head and the electrodes attached to his body and the orange tunic and the black hood on his head. Remember that guy? He came to symbolize U.S. abuse of power in Iraq. His name is Sattar Jabbar. He was a prisoner, Abu Ghraib prisoner, during the early years of Bush's adventure there. As it says at Wikipedia, during his detention there, he was subjected to severe physical and psychological torture by members of the U.S. military. Jabbar was not in Abu Ghraib on charges of terrorism. He was there because he was charged with carjacking. Jabbar was hooded, positioned on a box, and had wires attached to both hands and his penis, and was told that he would be electrocuted if he fell off the box. The Army claims that the wires were not live and that the prisoner at no time faced actual electrocution, only the threat. This was later contradicted by Jabbar, who stated in an interview that the wires were electrified and had been used to give shocks. There is no way to substantiate the claims of either party. This image, the image of this event, was one of the most prominent to be featured in the media coverage of the scandal and frequently reappeared as a symbol for the abuses within Abu Ghraib. Carjacking. And then this, Bill from Ottawa sent this to me. This is from Seymour Hersh. Bill writes, is it worth the massive, massive political disruption that a torture trial of Bush and his co-conspirators, including Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi, will cause? You tell me, Mike. And then he quotes Seymour Hersh. This is from streaming audio of his speech at an ACLU event. This is what Seymour Hersh said, quote, some of the worst things that happened you don't know about, okay? Videos. There are women there. Some of you may have read that they were passing letters out, communications out to their men. This is at Abu Ghraib. The women were passing messages out saying, please come and kill me because of what's happened. And basically what happened is that those women who were arrested with young boys, children, in cases that have been recorded, the boys were sodomized with the cameras rolling. And the worst above all of that is the soundtrack of the boys shrieking that your government has. They are in total terror. It's going to come out. End quote. Seymour Hersh. Well, I don't know how that sort of thing is repaired other than letting the world see that we are capable of and committed to bringing people to justice. You know, I certainly can understand, and I'm sure you can too, that there are a couple of reasons why Barack Obama wants to leave everything as it is and move forward. Not the least of which is he does not want to be assassinated, right? You know that as well as I do. As somebody once famously said regarding the Kennedy, the attempt on Kennedy's life, and then finally the successful attempt, the attempt on Reagan's life, the attempt on Harold Ford's life, all of these attempts to assassinate a president, as one of the Secret Service agents said, if somebody I forget, I'm paraphrasing, but what the Secret Service agent was saying is it's almost impossible to completely, 24/7, protect anybody. So, you know, I'm not inside Barack Obama's head, and it's easy for me or you to impugn his motives and say, well, he doesn't want to bring the Bush crime family to justice because he's part of the overarching conspiracy of moving this country to corporatism. There are perhaps other reasons, like he wants to continue to live. He's got two beautiful young daughters and an attractive young wife, and he wants to stay alive, wouldn't you? So who knows? Who knows what's going to happen? Let's just watch and participate day to day. Let's see what happens. Let's see what happens, huh? All right. Oh, wait a minute. Just a couple more here. Pickle's speech to the Afghan women. How long is it? 5 minutes. You want to do it now? Can't do it now. Can't stretch. Okay. All right, we'll do it when we come back. When we come back after the break. You want to take the break early? All right, start the music. We'll take this break early. We'll come back and we will share with you what it's five years old, but it's what Laura Pickles Bush said to the women of Afghanistan when she made a secret and very quick trip to Kabul. Under massive military protection. So stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.
Thinking about new ways to harm our country and our people, and neither do we.
It's about 19 past the hour. All right, this was from, I think, spring of 2004, a year and a half after the invasion of Afghanistan, and Laura Pickles Bush. This was after the Bush crime family stole the second presidential election, and Laura Pickles Bush went to Afghanistan to talk to the women there, and through the magic of digital recording, we managed to have someone there who recorded exactly what she said.
My fellow recently liberated women, I'm Laura Pickles Bush, and I want to thank you for inviting me to Afghanistan to educate you on the finer points of Western culture and fashion. I'm honored to spend these 30 heavily guarded minutes speaking through an interpreter to you lucky swarthy ladies so that you too can know the glory of wearing fine clothes like my snappy orange plaid pantsuit. I can see through your eye slits how eager you are to get started, so one of my assistants will be passing out personal grooming kits complete with tubs of crimson red lipstick and photos of one of our more stylish Southern Republicans, Miss Catherine Harris, for you to use as a guide. Freedom is on the march, and the poppies are blooming once again, ladies. Now that you're liberated, you no longer have to look like Paul Wolfowitz or my mother-in-law. So raise those veils and start plucking. Tweezers are your friends, gals. Since my Bushy brought democracy and a spanking new government to your formerly evil nation, you're now able to achieve your lifetime dream of flying kites and wearing white shoes. Until Labor Day, that is. But we'll save those more advanced etiquette lessons for my next 20-minute visit. Speaking of, we don't have much time before the calls to prayer have you scurrying back to your hairy and domineering, paranoid, fanatical, fundamentalist zealot hubbies faster than you can say clitorectomy, so let's begin. Now, not to brag, but in the wonderful land of America, I'm considered quite the snappy dresser. As I often advise my twin daughters, Jenna and the other one, during their sober moments, you can tell a lady by her ability to accessorize. I realize you've had scarce opportunity to nurture and develop your own unique fashion style since all you've been permitted to wear are identical dusty burlap charcoal grill covers for the last several decades, so I'm here to help. But before you burn that burka, you might want to stash it in the back of your hut. It may come in handy when you feel the urge to exercise your newfound freedom by sneaking a smoke without fear of reprisal from one of the more old-fashioned male members of your family who isn't quite ready to embrace your recent emancipation. You've come a long way, baby. No need to risk getting stoned to death now when freedom in Filene's basement are waiting just around the corner. Now, I know that most of you gals are not fortunate enough to be one of the wives of a prominent opium merchant or pipeline driller or well-paid warlord, so many of you are on a tight budget these days. Believe me, I can relate. Before landing a rich and powerfully politically connected husband, I spent several months slaving as a low-paid librarian, so I too have known the hardship of having to buy Liz Claiborne coordinates and separates off the clearance rack at TJ Maxx. I've outlined some helpful hints on how you, too, can achieve my look for less. For example, you can't misunderestimate the cosmetic value of simply maintaining a cheerful disposition. While a shortage of common medical supplies and sanitary needles may prevent you from appreciating the magical miracle that is Botox, nevertheless, you can improve your appearance 1,000% by just putting on a happy face. Did you know that it takes 43 muscles to frown, but only 17 to smile? And actually only 3 with the right prescription? So turn those frowns upside down and slap on the Maybelline. Moving on to your wardrobe issues, 40 yards of fabric can hide a multitude of sins, but now that you'll be permitted by the males in your household to occasionally venture out of the rubble to walk briefly about in the daylight, it's time to think about how to flatter your figure with form-fitting spring fashions. It may take some patient practice to learn to daintily dodge landmines while wearing aqua faux alligator slingback pumps like I have on today, but trust me, the risk of serious injury and even death from inappropriate footwear is well worth it when you appreciate all the flattering male attention you'll receive as a result. Make sure you're the wife and or concubine he selects each night. You'll be amazed at how a pair of shapely heels both lengthen the leg and flame the fires of desire in even the most celibate, devout, and religiously crazed mullah. Imagine the wild and exciting nights you'll enjoy with your favorite Koran man. And you'll soon realize that there's no more powerful aphrodisiac than a 70% off sale at your neighborhood Lowman's. Now I'm sure you're thinking, but Pickles, where do I find lovely and affordable beauty products and practical fun fashions in our liberated but still ravaged and decimated land? We understand that even though democracy has arrived full force in your dingy little country, at present you have no fine shopping establishments in which to practice your budding capitalist consumer skills. That's why my Bushy and the more corporate-minded members of his administration are working with a fabulous humanitarian aid organization in America called Walmart to establish a safe, well-lit, carpet-bomb-free shopping zone so you can outfit your remaining children in style and also purchase the latest furnishings for your cave or hut or hovel or whatever you little brown folks live in. Now, I'd love to stay and chat more, but our interpreter has another engagement, and unfortunately, I don't speak babble. So be sure to attend our next seminar, which will be conducted by Karen Hughes and Scott McClellan on the topic of stylish dressing for the sexually misguided, Queer Plan for the Taliban. In closing, let me say, praise Allah, God bless Bush, and in your own language.
Oh, my God. I don't speak babble. Oh. That was
a long time ago.
That was
in a galaxy far, far away.
That was one of your better ones there, Ms. Kathy. I swear to God, every time I hear that, where do you come up with that stuff? Jesus, you ought to be writing for a real program and not here on the
I prefer to use my powers for good.
Oh, yeah, okay. That's some funny stuff. That is, we got more of those planned for this week? You got a couple more? Whew. Well, never mind. That's just funny. Funny, funny, funny. Khalil wrote in during the Mrs. Bush's reading there. Khalil writes, I'm re-listening to the inaugural address at least 20 times. Obama intelligently and skillfully put a boot in Bush's ass. I almost didn't realize how subtly pointed some of his points were as I listened live. I think I was so enamored by the strangely articulate speech. Isn't that the truth? Somebody who writes their own stuff and knows how to pronounce, you know, words.
Job because I've got great advice and advisors to whom I get good advice from great advisors to whom I listen.
Ben Birch writes in, Roosevelt said that once he was elected, it was the people's job to make him keep his campaign promises. Well, he was right then, and that's right now. We need to be Obama's stiff spine. We need to support him and give him direction. Ben. And Corey writes in a subject line, it's a good day for black people and atheists. He writes, Mike and Kathy, tell me, when was the last time you heard any public figure in this country publicly acknowledge the existence of atheists, that they are as good Americans as the dogmatic, mouth-breathing, praise Jays as Christians are? It's nice to have an actual president do some uniting rather than claim to do so and then do the exact opposite. And he signs it, Corey in Louisville, Kentucky, atheist and now a recognized American, listening on the Internet and Sirius. Yeah. Barack Obama did say that today, didn't he? And Corey's right. When's the last time you heard anybody in public life acknowledge the existence of people who do not necessarily believe in a sky spook, who may believe in some higher power, but don't believe in a sky spook, you know? Wow. And an update here from our economic advisor, Prairie Two, who writes, Mike, Asian markets had rallied early Wednesday on the news that Obama had repudiated Bush's policies and would move quickly and boldly to fix the economy. But the Obama rally has petered out, and they are now down between 1% and 2% near the close of the trading day, Wednesday in the Far East. The constant drumbeat of bad news, a lack of credit, company losses, more and bigger layoffs are overwhelming hope. Like FDR, Obama will have to clean out the corruption in the banking system and close down the unregulated trading markets before things will return to normal. And when he says things will get worse before they get better, he isn't kidding. Yeah, that's the part to me, as unschooled as I am in things economic. But I mean, you can't profess ignorance about what has happened to our economic system any longer, because all the information you need is there in the popular press, written in short sentences, so that people like me can understand it. I said several months back that I have taken to reading, or I had taken to reading, the business section of the New York Times, and surprise, surprise, it's very easy to read. I know that comes as a shock, because a lot of you already read the business section of the Times, but I never paid that much attention to it until about 6 months ago, and it is extremely scary to read here of late. But as Prairie 2 says, the people who understand the system and who write for not just the New York Times but also the Wall Street Journal and several other leading business publications now are starting to reveal the truth that the banking system is so completely corrupted. Completely. It's like a massively destructive virus gets on your computer. I mean, there are times when you can try any repair you want. You can scrub the hard drive, but there comes a point when you just look at the computer, look at the machine, and you say, God damn, they really got me this time, and you have to throw it in the trash and start all over again. And I think that's what some of these folks who understand not just economics, but also this weird system that we use in this country that the rest of the world always saw as, if not infallible, certainly based in reality. And now they realize that it is fallible and that it was not based in reality and that it is going to collapse. So hold on to your ass, truth seekers. I mean, I'm getting that from friends of mine who are in the building business or in the mortgage business. And, of course, reading the business section of the Times and other online publications. Hold on to your ass, because it's going to be quite a ride. And if Barack Obama is really going to provide the leadership to turn things around, then I think what's going to have to happen is the complete and temporary, I guess, because this country's not ready for democratic socialism. But a temporary complete nationalization of most of the banks, if not the entire banking system, so that the government, the treasury, the taxpayers, the gross domestic product, however you want to call it, can absorb the losses, not just absorb the losses, but force a reissuing of credit. A credit is what makes the country move. If you're a builder, you need credit. If you're a manufacturer, you need credit. If you're a car dealer, you need credit. If you make steel, you need credit. I mean, you just need it in order to build your plant or to make a payroll or to introduce a new product line or to retool your machinery. It has to be there, and it's not. It's just, you know, we're going to come out of the euphoria. What's today? Tuesday? Maybe by Thursday, we're all going to come out of this, and it's going to be right in front of our faces. What? Not just Barack Obama. I mean, he doesn't live in the same kind of a bubble that this jackass who just went back to Texas lived in. He's astute enough, and he's understanding enough, and he's intelligent enough to know what he's facing. And I think most of us either have not been paying attention to the economic side of this this horror, or we've convinced ourselves we don't understand it, and it is understandable. It is. I mean, if I can do it, anybody can understand it. And what we're facing is horrific situation. There are still two or three areas of finance in this country that we haven't heard from yet. One of the biggest ones is the credit card industry, and when that starts to shred, that's what I mean about hold on to your ass, because it's just going to be, it's not going to be pleasant. It's not going to be pleasant. And that's not scary, spooky talk. That's just, I mean, that's where we are. The Bush crime family just ripped and raped and destroyed this country. Just, I mean, just plundered it. This is like highwaymen in the 15th century. These are like privateers on the high seas in the 18th century. I mean, these people were just absolute bandits. Cowards to the last man and woman, but bandits nonetheless. Just absolutely, absolutely. So I'll tell you, you know, people can be cynical, and no one's more cynical than I am about the feel good attitude that floated up from 2 million people in D.C. today and over the airwaves and permeated just about every section of this country except the most hard asses among us. But as good as that feeling was, it runs the risk of and you know this, I'm not lecturing, man, you know this as well as I do. It runs the risk of coming just head on into the reality that we are facing. Bush and Cheney and the rest of these pigs have told us nothing. Nobody has been straight with the American public. Bernanke and Paulson have those lying sons of bitches. We need $750 billion or people to be rioting in the streets. Okay. So nobody has been honest with us in the political world, has been honest with us about what we are facing. Nobody. Nobody has said a word. Well, when that reality comes crashing through, there's nobody in the Barack Obama government, I don't think. I may be wrong. You know, there are a couple of people who are a bit dodgy, in my opinion, certainly. But I don't think there's anybody who is going to indulge in the same kind of total deception. I mean, one of the functions of government is deception. Okay. But the total deception that the Bush crime family has put out there, I just don't, and I'll tell you why. Because I think the Obama administration is going to try. They are. If this thing overwhelms them, I think they want to make sure that the blame is placed where it belongs. You know, a lot of talk about, well, we're not into the blame game. We're not into this. We want to look forward. That's all well and good. Look forward. Let's go. Rock and roll. But you hear that noise behind us as we're looking forward? That's a whole goddamn civilization crumbling. That's what that noise is that you hear in the back of your head. That's what that is. You know, it sounds like cheers and applause today, but wait till Thursday or Friday how that noise will change from cheers and applause to things breaking into a million pieces. So I hope that you and I and all of mine and all of yours and Barack and his government, I hope everybody gets a firm grip because, man, we're in the front cart of the scream machine. So get ready for it. Ten before the hour, thanks to our engineer Ian Huff, our technical advisor Ben Birch, our military affairs correspondent Sharon Gordy, Bob Alexander and Bridget Wolf, our ethical advisors, and our economic advisor Bruce Enberg. Catherine Bay is the executive producer. Okay, I said something vaguely about phone calls. It seems like a day ago. But anyway, let's take some calls. DeMarcus is calling from New Jersey, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. DeMarcus, welcome to the program.
Mike Malloy.
DeMarcus.
Can you hear me, my brother?
I hear you.
I'm still alive, and you can keep it with your flower money.
I'll tell you what, just keep moving, all right?
You know I'm going to keep moving. Man, I lost you there for a minute. What happened, man? I thought they'd cut my blood off at the knees, man. I thought I was about to go on the warpath, man.
No,
I'm so angry when you show up on my radio.
No, that won't happen. Y'all are on top right now, so don't worry about it.
Well, you know, yeah, but it's a great day that I get the chance to talk to you. I skipped the Obama mania and all that. Talking to you today is my greatest joy.
Oh, come on, DeMarcus, you're just saying that.
Hey,
you're just saying that because it's true.
Yes, right. I just finished. I'm completing a body of work with some of our conversations are in it. I will be sure to send you a copy of it.
All right, please do. I'd like to see it, sure.
And like I said, remember when we shook it up and we inflamed the base and they wanted to cut satellite radio out and all that? We scared them, Mike.
I hope so. I hope somebody scares somebody.
We scared the hell out of them, Mike. And this is the fruition of that fear we struck in them. Guys like you and Ambrose I. Lane and various other progressive people all throughout the world. We scared the cowards. And I want to tell especially progressive white America, thanks for finally stepping up.
Yeah, really.
You know, thank you all for finally stepping up.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Because there's nothing but cowards. You know what I'm saying? They've got their tails tucked. But don't become vigilant and rest on your laurels now. There's still much fighting to be done.
That is the truth. And
No,
I agree with you about white people in this country finally waking up to
right. And I want to thank you very much.
Well, that's and I'm sure people hear that, DeMarcus. But it really does get back to what Dr. King said: judging somebody by the content of their character. And you know, Obama may turn out to be something that that will be a surprise and not a good surprise. But I can't believe that what I've been watching from this guy for almost 2 years is an act, or that he's a phony. Or that he is going to let corporate America, which devours politicians, devour him. I can't see Barack Obama and his wife and his two daughters being the phonies that we're so used to having in politicians. You know what I'm saying?
Well, here's the deal, Mike. Barack Obama can rest assured that people like me is not going to roll over just because we just happen to be of some same ethnicity.
Yeah.
You know, that's not going to happen. I'm hard on Barack Obama right now. And I'm not pulling no punches. Like you made reference to a lot of people was depressed when Bush became president of years. I came out to shoot him attacking Bush. I've been fighting them people all my life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was 11 years old the first time I looked down the gun of four redneck police, you know, 11 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew I was in a war then.
2 years
later, I was shot up by the police. And I refuse to be afraid of these punks.
I hear you. I hear you loud and clear, DeMarcus. And somebody, I forget where I heard this, but I heard it somewhere today. Either it was in an email to me or it was on somebody's blog site or something. But an African-American person was saying, I'm paraphrasing here, but what, and I think it was a man, I don't think it was a woman, I think it was a man saying, you know, to anybody out there who reads this or who is listening, don't think for a second that black folk are going to ease up on Barack Obama. The point he was trying to make was, you know, Barack Obama's harshest critics are not going to be white people. The harshest critics are going to be.
That'd be me.
Yeah. Well, it'll be you. That's right, DeMarcus. And I'm counting on you, man. I want you to keep him straight. All right.
You know I'm gonna be on it. I'm like, you know what I mean. You know I'm gonna be on it.
I hear you.
I know. Sit on the radio, but you already.
I thought you were gonna say you're gonna be on him like white on rice, and I thought, no, wait.
That's not exactly what I was thinking.
No, DeMarcus wouldn't say that. He wouldn't say that. He might say something else, but he wouldn't say like white on rice. All right, I gotta go. Thanks.
All right,
thanks.
Later,
all right, DeMarcus. Bye. Stay in touch. I love DeMarcus. He's tough. He's very tough man. Alex is calling from Los Angeles, listening on the Internet. Alex, welcome to the program.
Evening, Mike.
Hey.
Listen, today was a beautiful thing. I was crying throughout the day. Well, not the whole day, thank God. But anyway, but I still have just this little nagging thing that's been bothering me about Bush. I'm still having a hard time understanding how he didn't let loose with a slew of pardons yesterday. It just keeps bothering me. I keep thinking to myself, everybody thought he was going to do it, and he didn't. It just it doesn't seem right to me, and I'm thinking with those signing statements where he basically said, I'm going to do this, and then on the back he said, yeah, but I'm really going to do this.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any possibility you think he could have, like, secretly written something down that somehow is takes effect after the fact?
You know, I've got the same I had the same thought several times, Alex, over the past couple of days, because as the clock ran down on this sucker, I kept waiting for this massive issuance of pardons or commutations. And the only people that got commutations other than Scooter Libby were the two Border Patrol people. But I don't know. It was bizarre on the one hand. On the other, not so bizarre. Bush has no loyalty to anybody. He'll cut your throat no matter who you are and then step over you as you're bleeding to death. And I think that's all he displayed today. But we'll see, right? We'll see. Alex, thanks. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care, y'all. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.